Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 197 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we are back in the pit. We have a very special episode. It's a crossover edition. It's like when Belzer would travel down from New York to visit Andre Brower in Baltimore. Or when Henry Winkler would drop in on Penny Marshall in Milwaukee to see how she was doing. We've got the super rookie, Tim Hayes, coming in from the slow ride and joining us here in the media pit on Cyclocross Radio. And the great thing about having Tim on the show is that he comes in from the green room, sees the setup, looks around, says, "Hey, this stick shift. That's cool. Toss me the keys. I'll drive from here." And off we went. Wherever Tim wanted to take us. And you get to go along on the journey. And we're going to do that in a minute. But first, I want to tell you about the Tough 20 Virtual Challenge. This is part of the Mammoth Tough Gravel event that is now a Choose Your Own Adventure, but it's still an organized event. Manon Nauman, David Sheik have done a wonderful job putting together this really fun event that has several different challenges, including a scavenger hunt, a gravel report section, an altitude challenge, distance challenge, just really a lot of different ways that you can participate. And by being a Wide Angle Podium listener, you will get 10% off of your registration fee for the Tough 20 by entering Tough 10, capital T-U-F-F, all caps, and 10, Tough 10, Tough 10. And then you get to participate in all the fun for a little less than those non-Wide Angle Podium listeners. Great prizes to be given away. You get a bandana and a pair of socks just for entering. You get entered into a raffle for a sweet new Niner bike with Shimano Di2 GRX. Just an insane build on this thing. You get one-time discounts from all of the sponsors of the race. So go to mammothtough.com and check all of them out. And then go to Bike Reg and register. And we'd love to follow along and see what y'all are doing through your hashtags and Instagram posts about the Tough 20. Links to more information, they're down in the show notes. Check them out. Finally, before we get to our show, I want to tell you about the Wide Angle Podium Network. Lots of cool stuff on there. Today, I want to highlight the Gravel Lot, which is putting out just weekly content, just spanning the spectrum of cycling stories. On this week's show, got a good friend of mine, good friend of the show and the Wide Angle Podium, Taylor Jones. Go check out his story on the Gravel Lot. It is a really compelling listen. So check that one out. And then go to wideanglepodium.com. Check out all of the other shows and contents and become a member. We'd love to have you part of the community. And it helps us to continue bringing you all of this sweet content, including the media pit with the super rookie, Tim Hayes. We got him. We're doing it. And we're going there right now. Hey, Tim, welcome to the media pit. I'm glad that when you're in the green room with all of us, that instead of turning left to go into the slow ride studio, you were able to turn right to head into the cyclocross radio studio. So I'm glad you're able to make it.
I am absolutely thrilled to be here. Your podcast and the media pit is one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. It's always on the top listen right away. So thrilled to be here. Sorry.
I can say the same about the slow ride. I sit there and yell at all of you on a weekly basis as soon as it comes out. It makes my
mind. Now you can yell at me in person. This will be great.
Well, isn't this just one big love fest we're having here?
But since we are a cyclocross show with no cyclocross, we're going to branch out into some other things. We have some cyclocross stars doing some things. But before we do that, Tim, I wanted to first quickly ask you about the state of Florida cyclocross. When's the last time that you actually raced cyclocross?
I would say the last time I raced cyclocross was the when I had a good case of promoter legs by also putting on Spooky Cross in Winter Garden, Florida in 2016.
Okay. So
about 3 years. But I have a good 6 year run in there.
I was going to say, I've raced Florida Cross more recently than you have, Tim.
Yes, because you probably went across the border into Pensacola to race. But I will say that there's about a 6 year run there where I was heavily involved in FLCX, which FLCX was were the folks that brought the world the foam party in Louisville. A lot of people don't know that. So I like to remind everybody that was a idea that started on the road to Miami with a few of us from Gainesville, Florida. Because we figured at the time the only way we'd ever get someone in Miami to come to a cyclocross race was if there was a foam party. That is the story. We then brought it to Worlds, and it just took off from there from a couple of friends, Spencer, Brandon, and then all of us in the cyclocross world. And today, Bill, I sent you a photo from the foam party of Sven Nys in the middle, and who was in front of Sven Nys crowding into the photo?
Oh, man.
Cyclocross legend, Wout Van Aert, now Tour de France stage winner and the future of cycling. Some would say the greatest road transfer of all time from cyclocross.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know who, I mean, other than Mariana Voss, but I guess she started in road, so.
Yeah, you're not forgetting anybody that could possibly be better.
Someone named Matt might beg to differ. A certain Mathieu.
On the road? Has he won any Tour de France stages?
Has he been allowed to be in the Tour de France? I think
that is a moot point. Has he won a Tour de France stage? Has he won any Grand Tour stage?
Let's go here.
Has he won a monument?
I know this is your show, but I just want to ask you this question. Mathieu van der Poel, how can I to explain to my road cycling friends who are all about the Wout Van Aert train right now? They all think he is the greatest thing of all time. I have the feeling that they don't even know what is around the corner with Mathieu van der Poel. How do you even explain it? Like, they haven't even seen the guy that's better than Wout Van Aert.
It's like Batman before Bane shows up. So it's like all the previous Batman movies before the Dark Knight Rises.
Who has more elite world championships? Wout Van Aert in cyclocross, Wout Van Aert or Mathieu van der Poel?
Well, you want to get into it this way. I would say Wout Van Aert does. Right? Oh, are you counting that?
No, they're tied.
They're tied.
They're tied.
Oh, okay.
3-3.
I thought it was 3-1 for a while there, but I forgot that Mathieu van der Poel has been cleaning up lately.
Well, but I think you're like, I mean, the last couple of years have been kind of the year of Mathieu, and I think we're finally seeing, is this the first year of Wout? I mean, is this the first year of Wout?
Was it 2017? When was it when Van der Poel screwed up his knees and had all those surgeries and then sat out most of the cyclocross season? And that's when like Wout just like was just cleaning up, like he couldn't lose everything. He went out there,
and that's when we started.
That was the year that Tim found out about Wout.
Yeah, that was anybody but Wout year, and that's when Vanderpool was benched.
And then we all wanted him to come back, and then we quickly learned that no, we didn't want him to come back because it becomes way less entertaining.
Right.
I guess it's just that Mathieu van der Poel is suffering the most right now because A, he's not getting the race entries by getting into these races, and B, without the Olympics happening, we really couldn't see the crossover hero status of Mathieu van der Poel showing up to a discipline most people forget or care about except during an Olympic year, Olympic mountain bike racing, sadly, although I feel like it's getting more popular again. And then he just, you know, he's lost that side. So now he just needs to settle for winning the, Dutch national championships.
Yeah. And the great thing about Van der Poel is that he's kind of like the Bartleby, the Scrivener of cycling in that he just doesn't care. He's like, you know, he Matthew, if you race one more mountain bike race, you'll be able to take the World Cup overall. Matthew, if you head over to Canada, you can win the World Championship, no problem. He's like, no, I'm happy with my season. I think it went well. And people just can't, like, wrap their heads around that, where he's just like, yeah, not my goal. I'm not going to do it. And the same with like, why are you messing around with mountain biking? And, you know, people sort of understand the Olympics, but they're like, well, you could just, you know, be a man, grow up already, race on the road. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You can win the Olympics, you know, road race. So, but he's always like, yeah, I'm just going to do my own thing. He wants to be a downhiller.
Let's, yeah, that would be amazing, wouldn't it? If he just started showing up on downhill. So, man, I'll just completely, I'm totally hijacking this one. You three become road team managers, right? You guys are selecting your future. I know you're all about cyclocross. You guys know everything about cyclocross. I learned most of my things about cyclocross from you guys. You have the number one draft pick in creating a team. Do you go Wout Van Aert for your future, or do you go Matthew Vanderpool for your future? Would be the first question. And secondarily, which one do you think is more valuable to your sponsor, Matthew Vanderpool or Wout Van Aert?
Well, I'll go first. You said road team, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You said,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're Jonathan Vaughters in this situation. You are creating a team, blank checkbook, but you have to choose between Wout Van Aert and Matthew Vanderpool.
Where do we get the Mexican non-union equivalent of Wout Van Aert and Matthew Vanderpool?
Oh, wow. Okay. I would totally pick Wout Van Aert. And this is why.
Ooh. Bolt off for which one? For both?
What do you mean? No, I'm picking my all-star road team.
Yeah, but the rook asked two questions.
Yeah, the follow-up then is also like, who's going to cost you more money, Wout Van Aert or Matthew Vanderpool?
No, that was the third question. No, the question was, who's more valuable to you? That's not the question you asked. You just asked the third question.
Isn't who I picked the who's most valuable to me?
Well, I don't know. Are they
the
same?
Who's the most valuable to a sponsor was how the question was framed.
I totally think that Wout is, because look, and if you look at the way that Wout races, yesterday he was playing the super domestique ultimate teammate, sacrificing his legs, shredding the rest of the road racers, clawing up a Cat 1 climb. Today he's winning a bunch sprint and is the consummate pro. So he gives you everything. He gives you the team leader, and he also gives you the guy who's also the domestique. And he gives great interviews. He has the sound bites. He has cute little Instagram stories with his wife. You know, he's the whole package. He has that everyman appeal. Okay, granted, he might not be the bottle rocket that Vanderpool is, but I think if you're sort of like, if you're looking at stocks, like he's the medium risk, long-term investment. Vanderpool maybe would be your sort of like one contract year. We got to like put it all on this and try to get away big.
Okay. Zach, who do you take?
Oh, I was going to take Wout for both of them. So I guess I kind of agree with Michael. Also, I mean, I guess I was going to make this point. I was reading, I think, Bill, you've highlighted this before, but they were talking to Vanderpool's dad, and they were like, so what does Matthew think about, like, you know, being a road racer and tactics and being smart? And he's like, yeah, he just relies on his talent. And I think in my opinion, we're seeing where that doesn't always work. And I think one reason I like Wout is that it seems like he's a student of the game, if that's possible in bike racing. And I just think that he's going to give you more results where Vanderpool he'll do some spectacular things like he did at Amstel Gold. But I think, like Michael pointed out, like he's the team player, the glue guy. He's not even a glue guy. That's selling him short. I don't know. Like, who's a guy? Like, Bill, give me a guy who does it on both ends.
Well, I was going to go in that direction, Zach. I need to come up with an actual guy, but and I'm not saying that I'm picking Wout for this, but I look at Wout, and I almost think it was a mistake that his talent lay in cycling as opposed to, like, football or basketball or something like that, because he so loves being on a team. And he's like the coach's son. You know, I mean, he's just out there and just like he's
Austin Rivers.
Yeah. Because like Michael was saying, you know, not only was he super domestique, the day before that, he had 10 bottles down his jersey and was that's taking right. them up to his teammates. I mean, this is a guy that's like the best, you know, one of the best in the world who's carrying water for his teammates. And even if you go back to last season after he crashed into those barriers and he's like lying in a hospital bed all hopped up on meds and he's like sending notes to his teammates after watching the stages on TVs about what he's seen. He's like scouting teams. He's like chewing through tape. I mean, he's just like, he's the consummate team player. He's an X's and O's guy, yet he still has the speed to win at the end. And that's why, Tim, I'm picking Vanderpool.
Thank you, Bill, for a couple reasons here. I thought it was going to be 3-1. I'm much happy with 2-2. And here's the thing. I think that you guys are suffering from recency bias. And by you guys, I mean Zach and our friend down in New Orleans, Bodheimer. So here's the deal.
Wow. Is that
as we're sitting
how
here.
How long did you rehearse this, by the way?
I did.
Don't break his flow. Come
straight
on.
Off the, okay. Straight, off, right. straight off the
I'm trying to throw him off his game.
Here's the deal. Matthew Vanderpool is the future of cycling. You would be an idiot not to take him with the first pick to build an entire franchise around him for a variety of reasons. One, he does every single discipline possible, and he doesn't care, and there's pure enjoyment on him right now. He wants to do mountain bikes because he thinks he can go win it. So when there isn't a road race, guess what? Single track or short track mountain bike race, I'll go beat Nino Schurter as easy as I can. Oh, Nino Schurter, the greatest mountain biker of the last decade. Matthew Vanderpool, if he focused on it, could beat him at that whenever he wants. He shows up to road racing and puts on a show of epic proportions in that if I would have been privileged enough to come on the media pit last year after Amstel Gold, you guys would be singing his praises to high heavens and going, wout who? Right now, Matthew Vanderpool is suffering from the pure fact that he is on a smaller team that doesn't get automatic bids into the Tour de France. Was he on top of his game at the first half of this season? No, but guess what? I don't know if you guys check the calendar. There's still 57 days of racing in the next 70. Talk to me in November on who is going to be having a better season. I'm willing to bet it's going to be Matthew Vanderpool. And then to the second question on why Matthew Vanderpool is by far the most important athlete to any one of these companies. It has to do with his ability to be against, once again, all different disciplines. While Van Aert has a much better look, hair, everything's fantastic about like his getup. Matthew Vanderpool doesn't matter. Canyon is going to be with him through and through till the end of time, almost to the level of Peter Sagan with Specialized. That, I mean, you take him, you're going to get a bike sponsor that's paying you money to have him on your team. It's a no-brainer. Jonathan Vaughters, being the small ball player that he is going to take Matthew Vanderpool 9 times out of 10 over Wout.
Yeah, he
doesn't have the budget for it, though.
Not to.
No, he doesn't.
not to go with the obvious property here for me, but Matthew Vanderpool is the ultimate heat check guy. Like,
yeah.
You want him because at any moment he could just go out and win a race. I mean, look at the Dutch national championship a week ago. We're talking about all of these great guys on Jumbo Visma. What did Matthew Vanderpool say? They're irritable. They're irritants. They're just in my way. They're annoying. They were all ganging up on him for the first couple laps of that Dutch road race. And he was like, guys, stop. You're like gnats on me. And then he just took off and left them and like won by like a minute, you know, and that you can't get that anywhere else. He does the same thing. He didn't lose a short track race in mountain biking last year. He won like 50 some races in a row in cyclocross, that Amstel Gold race. Every time he gets into a, you know, he's a little off this year, but once he gets rolling on the road, he is going to be winning. Is he the coach's son? No, he's not. But that's the guy that you pay for, and you get as much as you can out of him for a couple years, and then you just move him on his way to Vaughters after he's already too old and too slow.
I think the upside of Matthew Vanderpool is what gets me, and like I wasn't trying to come too hard down on you guys on the Wout train over there. It's just that Wout Van Aert is gonna be a cyclist that we're gonna love to watch for the next 5 or 6 years, that is gonna have multiple stage wins. Who knows if he can become kind of a you know, win some more monuments or whatever. Matthew Vanderpool, to me, because of the cross-discipline and just the pure dominance, I feel that we're looking at a complete generational talent. Whereas, while Van Aert is a great talent, but, you know...
Whoa. But, I mean, you're talking about, like, we started with a road team. Like, we didn't start with a team. I mean, yeah, I think to your point, like, if you had said, like, who you... But, you know, you're talking about a road team. I'm just not convinced that, like, you know, the talent's there. I think, like Bill said, sure, you signed him for a couple of years, but, you know, Wout, I think, being the person who actually cares about winning, you know, learning how to win races, can do, you know, what Sagan has done, you know, into his 30s, still be winning, you know, green jerseys or what have you.
Bad example. Yeah.
It just...
Oh, okay. Sorry. But like someone who can be winning, you know, win jerseys for a number of years, and like, is Vanderpool ever going to show the discipline when he doesn't have, you know, that? Okay, I just, what?
You no, think no, I was agreeing with you, Zach. I'm saying,
yeah, no, I'm just concerned. I'm concerned. Like,
like so you said, Bill, Vanderpool is not committed. So like, if you're a team, you're setting up a structure, and you want to show your sponsors what you can do. You're gonna guy who's like gonna be in the lead for the World Cup, but then skip the last race because he doesn't want to. Right?
I didn't say he wasn't committed. I just said he was mercurial.
I think he's not committed. I think he's not committed. I think that's why I would pick Wout. I think, Tim, he's got a great upside. I agree with you. But with a big upside, with high risk, you're going to have, you know, disaster results. And that's him not sort of fulfilling all those roles. And then all of a sudden, one day is like, I don't want to race road anymore. Like you said, I'm going to go check out, you know, motocross.
That'd and be then amazing.
You're like, then you're sitting there like
e-bike racing. He's going to be turning. So here's my final question before I get off of this. On clearly Wout has had a successful season, well beyond what you guys who have been following him for years have probably anticipated for this year. I mean, already we are just in the beginning part of the season, September 2nd, and we are seeing a year of epic results that are fantastic. What would it take for Matthew Vanderpool to even be there? I mean, he's got like only things on his calendar basically are the monuments. He's got Flanders, Roubaix, Amstel Gold, which he should win again. Liège, Flesh. Yeah.
We need to go to a voicemail. So let's take a listen here.
Hey, Bill, this is Matt in Minneapolis. Don't you think that with Wout winning so much, this is just going to force Vanderpool into a almost unbelievable situation of having to win every monument this fall plus a grand tour somehow, which I don't, how is he gonna do that? I just feel I'm gonna have to do it. Maybe he'll have three babies rather than just one. All right, I'll take my call off the air. Thanks.
Wow. Matt from Minneapolis.
Calling in.
Sounds familiar. What's crazy is he and I are on the absolute same wavelength, but we have not rehearsed this, nor did we talk about this. But I do think that Matt's got a great question here. It's, you know, he's got Torino Adriatico, so maybe he wins that to get a little bit of conversation, but he has to be angry with Wout getting all these accolades, looking so good. There's got it. What's that old picture that you guys have shown me many times before when there are kids, juniors, and they're on the desk at the cyclocross race doing the post-race wrap-up, and they're both sitting next to each other, and one looks really, really grumpy, and the other one's happy? You know what the picture I'm talking about?
No.
Now just fix that in post. We'll get it up on Instagram. Right?
Here's something that I sort of plays off of what you talk about a lot, Tim, with Wout racing and Matt on the call brought up the kid situation, because we know that Wout's going to be a dad. My do you think that when Wout takes his kids on a camping trip and they're sitting around the campfire and they're telling ghost stories, that Wout will tell the story about how in these woods, when you're out walking, you'll think that somebody's always behind you, and you'll just hear almost like the squeaking of brakes. And you'll keep walking. There'll be nobody around there. And you'll know, and you'll be like, oh, in these woods, it's the Vanderpool. He's always right there. And the kids are like, no, that's just a ghost story. There's no Vanderpool. And then all of a sudden, boom, turn around, and there he is. And he just passes by you, and you just see him, like, going off into the distance. And you're like, Wout's just turning around. See, I told you guys. I always tell people, he's right there. He's always right there.
This has legs. I will produce this.
I feel like, is that Matt in Minneapolis' new book to write? New ghost story for kids.
He can use it. He can use it.
It is so crazy to think about what those two have accomplished.
So I think to answer little guy Matt from Minneapolis' question, I think that, yeah, Vanderpool needs to run the table.
For such a historic season, he has to win three monuments. Never, like, this hasn't been done since, what, Merckx in 72?
Paris-Roubaix double. Come on. If he did a Paris-Roubaix double, I think that would, with the Dutch Nats, and he's going to the Vuelta. He could win a Grand Tour stage.
Well, let's get to the good stuff.
Wait, so I have actually one more question about this, and this ties back to what you're saying, Tim, about the team he's on. So someone posted, and I'll do a plug for you, Tim, and the Slow Ride Pod Fan Experience Zone on Facebook. Someone posted a question about how long is Vanderpool on this circus team, insinuating that it's what's holding him back. You talked about his probably lifetime sponsorship with Canyon. Like, is he going to go to a movie star? Like, what's going on? Is circus? Corendon Circus, or sorry, it's Alpes and Phoenix. Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Are they moving up to World Tour next year? Like, what's going on there?
I think they will be moving up. They have the money with Alpecin. And then also, I think that the plan is that Matthew Vanderpool will become such a mandatory starter in so many of these races that they're not going to turn him down, right? Like, they're going the route that, like, you would be an idiot to invite BBT hotels of Brian Cocard to be your sprinter or whomever, right? When you could have Matthew Vanderpool rubbing elbows with Wout Van Aert. Like, it's, the story writes itself. I mean, these guys, they're coupled together.
That team is not letting him go.
I can't imagine that they're built around him, right? Bill, yeah. Help me out here. I mean, they've also, like, built out their team. They have Carmen De Alvarado, right, signed up. So
yeah, I mean, and we know it would be unprecedented for a cyclocross star to force himself out of a big contract. This is where you talk about Aqua Blue again. I know you love talking about them, Tim.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I just am thinking all about, you know, I don't want to get into one by drivetrains, whereas then Zach schools me on tech here.
Oh no! We talked about them, and it all ended up on the cutting room floor. after we recorded it, and then I listened to your brilliant takedown of the one buys on road on the slow ride. I was like, well, we can't have that on our show too.
Yeah, it's a very small room that we're all fighting for here. So it's good. Thank you for that. But I mean, I don't know, guys. I think that I appreciate you entertaining me with this conversation on Wout and Matthew Vanderpool, and especially the history of Rabobank, Lotto Jumbo, and kind of all of these racers in the cyclocross world that have come over to the roadside. That is pretty awesome to see. There are so many to talk about. I don't even know how you want to get into that, or if you even want to talk. I mean, Lars Boom is the one that first came up to me right away, because yeah, that was when I was kind of starting to get into cyclocross at the level, and then he goes to road, and that was pretty cool. Then you got Stibar. I mean, granted, he wasn't on Rabobank, but he also went over to the roadside. You know, has his career been as successful as Wout and Matthew Vanderpool? Probably not, but it's still a successful career.
I don't think there has been, you know, on the men's side, a real success story since Audrey Vanderpool.
Wow.
Doing both cyclocross and road, and having success at both. I mean, Sven Nys tried to, you know, another Rabobank guy, you know, was forced to do some road work and just did nothing in it. Lars Vanderhaar was supposed to be a road guy. He was on Rabobank. Never did anything. I think, didn't he do like Paris-Roubaix one year and just got dropped fast?
I think so.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, I mean, let's talk about Stibar. Yep. Like, Stibar had a pretty good transition. Granted, it was to Quickstep, but he's won Strada Bianchi, right? He's won Umloop
Flanders.
E3. It's a pretty good. He got second at Roubaix a couple times, and he's won some stages in two of the Grand Tours. Overall, I would say Stibar's had a pretty good career. The problem for him probably is that he went to Quickstep, and they won't even let him do anything outside of, you know, a certain narrow career arc. He's probably getting paid pretty well, but he, you know, if he was on a Lotto Jumbo or one of these other teams, they'd probably be like, yeah, go race cyclocross. We don't care. Go do some of these other races.
I think you hit the nail on the head with that. You got a Czech guy coming into a Belgian team at the same time that Tom Bonin's there, Nicky Terpstra's there. There were times when we saw that he was the strongest guy on that Quick Step squad, but was not allowed to win the races that he was brought in to win. You know, these the Paris-Roubaix, the Flanders. There were times that he was the man on that team, but I think it was political, and there was no way that they were going to support him over a Belgian rider. So I think you're right that he was the guy. Unlike Lars Boom, it just didn't ever seem to really take to the road, and I probably, you know, was looking at the money versus what he was doing in cyclocross. Somebody like Stibar was a very talented road racer who possibly not in the right situation for him to have success at that level. I'm sure for him, he's like the nicest guy in the world. He's like, I had a super successful career. I was able to help all these guys do all these things, but yeah.
So here's a question. Like, I mean, I think we're seeing this a little bit, you know, you're talking about guys who are kind of like forced to race on the road and we're not allowed to do cross. And it seems like that's changing a bit, right? You know, Wout's team gave him the green light even after he impaled his leg to come back and race cross. Would this conversation be different 8 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, in terms of talking about this multidisciplinary success? Would it, you know, would they be taking Wout and just being like, dude, you're done. You're done racing cross.
Well, and I think that it's changing even more because of the success of those two guys, right? I mean, what did we learn, Tim, during the whole Tour de France last year about how everybody now has to race cyclocross in the off season? Because I compared it last year to it's the new 90 RPM cadence that, you know, in the Lance years, that's what we learned from, you know, Miguel Indurain, according to Phil Liggett, taught that to Lance Armstrong. And then Lance, you know, won 7 tours only because he was pedaling at 90 revolutions per minute. And that was the key. And then everybody, you know, who was a Cat 5 up had to, like, you know, have a 90 RPM cadence. That is now it's cyclocross. Now, if you want to be successful, if you're a Cat 5 road racer, you have to race cyclocross because that's what Wout Van Aert does.
Yeah. And then in 5 years, it's going to be everyone racing gravel because that's right. I'm just curious on the, so on the men's side, we've seen kind of a tough transition. Stibar was probably successful since Andre Van Der Poel, because it's in a different frame. And then you have Wout Van Aert, Matthew Van Der Poel. But on the women's side, it's been pretty impressive on who has come over to purely dominate racing. Why do you guys think that is? Do you think it has to do more with that? I mean, granted, we're dealing with, from what I can gather, listening to your guys' shows and then also watching the coverage of the World Cups and cross in Europe, that the women are always just so discounted in their skill level that therefore it's just assumed that to make a living, you have to race almost year round versus being able to focus on just one discipline. And that's why you have Marianne Vos that's like, oh, I need to make money this week, so I am going to get the appearance fee at cyclocross, but then also get paid peanuts to be arguably the greatest living cyclist right now as Marianne Vos. I don't know. I'm curious as to why the transition is easier for superstardom on the roadside of women cyclocross racers.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's the money, and it's starting to change. You know, we talked to Magali Rochette last week, and she is a cyclocross only athlete, but it's rare. You know, but again, we look at the where you can make money as cyclocross. Sané Kant is a cyclocross only athlete. She's like the only one on the women's side, and she's Belgian, where she's able to get that sponsorship money to make it worth it. But if you even look back at that Rabobank team that we were talking about and all the crossover athletes from that team, you have Marianne Vos, you got Talita de Jong, you have Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, Sabrina Stoltein, Sanne van Passen, Lucinda Brand, all starting in the Rabobank program, all excelling on the road, excelling in cyclocross. You know, you look at PFP, she had a world championship and everything. You know, she's probably a mountain biker first. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, there was an opportunity here where Matthew Vanderpool could have won all three world championships, right? Mountain bike, cross, road, like realistically. And the whole time you're like, yeah, but PFP already did that. Like, right? Yeah. Like, try something else, Matthew. Like, it was so impressive when she pulled that off. I'm curious. I appreciate the conversation on it.
I want to go back to something, though. I think that with Mariana Voss and even, you know, listen to Brand and going to Wout and to Vanderpool, I think you're looking at riders who are just at a level just above anybody. And so that they could do any sport. Like, it doesn't matter what it was. They're just so good. They're going to win. And I think that I think you actually see that, like, just because you race cyclocross doesn't mean you're actually going to be a good road racer. I think on the women's side, I think what we've seen is that the level is gotten better. Like, so like when Voss was, like, you know, 10 years ago tearing things up, like the depth was wasn't as deep, but now the more women racing, the more women we have doing it, it's got so strong that now Voss can't just go into a cross race and win anymore, right? Like, it's so much higher. So I think that's sort of what has happened, and I don't know.
Yeah, and even in cyclocross and just, you know, talking to some of the veteran women at the highest level who all say it's like it's completely changed, and those kids at the front, I mean, they just go from the gun and they don't let up, and it's a whole different ball game in women's cyclocross, which is awesome. I mean, we love it for it. It's always been exciting, but now when you have, you know, Celine and Lucinda Brand and Anne-Marie Wurst, and they're all just like, you know, and Castellin, and they're all just firing on all cylinders from the gun and not letting up, it looks a lot different, and I think it's a lot more exciting, assuming one of the Dutch women doesn't get away in the second lap and then we're just watching them the whole time.
I was going to say, were you on this podcast?
Well, I think it's harder, and I think that it's going to take, you're right, so let me backpedal on that a little bit and say
the athleticism, the level of competition and play is higher, but like, frankly, when we had those big massive like bunches of eight in the last lap was, I don't know, ostensibly more inch. So it seems like there's some catching up.
That's what I think is going to happen over the next couple of years, because that's now the norm. So I think that this whole U23 field that we're seeing in junior field know that that's what you need to do to race now. And I think in the next year or so, we're going to get more than just those first three up there, you know, or maybe we won't. And it'll just look like men's racing has for the decade before that, when it was just Niels and Sven and whoever else.
Let's go wild card Sunday here for you guys. Do you think Wout van Aert sits there on that team bus, looks across from him, looks at Sepp Kuss in the eyes, and just goes, "Hey, Sepp, tell me about that time you lost to Danny Summerhill in a cross race in Louisville in 2013, all four races that you did."
Now, make sure that we don't want our Colorado friends to get mad. This isn't Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, sorry. I didn't even know.
This is the Colorado series.
Apologies. But still, the point stands. Sepp Kuss, not such a good cyclocross career here.
But like to go back to our initial discussion, I think why, you know, Wout does bring you that value is, as Bill pointed out, he's like the most friendly, interesting Belgian who's ever done bike racing. I bet Wout has been on cross results and looked up, you know, I bet there would be an occasion for Wout to look up the Kuss buses. Do you think results on cross results, I mean, and start calling them out? I could see Wout doing this.
Matt Shriver beat Sepp Kuss. I hope that he points that out every single time he's on the getting off the Trek bus and he sees Sepp. Hey, Sepp, how about we talk about, you know,
Interlocking Cyclo X, or
there are mechanics on that list that beat him that we know. There are,
yeah,
you know,
everybody's claim to fame is going to be, yeah, I raced against Sepp when he was 11 years old and I beat him. I chopped him to get 15th. What?
I will say another thing, just talking about Wout on that team bus that I did want to point out, you know, with his win today, and I know when this comes out, it's going to be 4 or 5 days in the past since he did that, but we're coming up the road, you know, for the finale, and it's two guys from Sunweb in front of him, and then it's Wout, and you have to think that, like, in Wout's head, he's like, Sunweb? I've been beating these guys for years. Who is it, like Klaus Van Tornout or Kevin Powels? Like, who is that up there, you know? And it just clicked. He was like, oh, these are guys I beat all the time. And then he was able to take it.
So how do you guys deal with this? How do you guys deal with, I mean, this is the most indie rock fan situation I have ever come across. The you three who have been on the Wout train for God knows how long, along with Matthew Vanderpool, now they're having all this success. There's got to be a part of you where you're like, yeah, I liked him before they were cool, right? And now you're already on to the Van Tornouts.
We knew Wout when he DQ'd the junior Belgian national championships and refused to quit. When he false started and got DQ'd and still wanted to race, and they had to, like, physically remove him from the race. Yeah. That's the fiery Wout.
So I can't claim to be as cool as Bill or Zach. But I want to point out the first time I really remember Wout was one of the, wow, I'm blanking on the show you did. Oh my God. Svenness. Okay. What an episode of Svenness when Wout and Sven went toe to toe and you had some like Jim Croce, like tug on Superman's cape thing going. Maybe I'm making that up, but you had some line there.
No, it was better than that. It was Method Man. It was like, you want to be the champ? You got to beat the champ. Jim Croce.
Well, I think I made this point, I guess, in a blog post that I wrote over at CX Hairs. I mean, I think Wout's success is one of the best things going for cyclocross right now. I mean, I've got my friend who only does road racing, and he's texting me. He's like, oh, did you see Wout? Like, look how Wout's doing. You know, how's his recovery going? And I'm like, you know, or like, oh, I watched a World Cup just to see how Wout would do. And I was like, wait, what? You don't watch cyclocross? you know, I love the crossover appeal. I'm on record. I think he's one of the most important things going for cross. And the success is the best thing, is super good for the sport. As long as he can, you know, continues sticking with it like he wants to.
Do you think that, but the only thing that would make it better on the men's side of things, because I'm with you guys, the women's side of racing is by far the most exciting, because when you just have either Matthew Vanderpool versus Wout, it's not as exciting. But if you can get Wout to have a better road career, there's kind of that dynamic of just this, like, I am so excited for the eternal rivalry these guys are going to have for the rest of their lives. Like, you need to have that, right? Foreman needed to have, or Joe Louis needed to have Ali, and you have all of these. The Celtics needed the Lakers, Bird Magic. The Bucks needed the rivalry with the Heat.
We need Wout back at his world championship level in cyclocross for sure. Because even, I just went back, I was on the trainer and watching Hoogerheide, which I was at, but I never really watched a race. And that is the race director of Hoogerheide is Audrey Vanderpool. And I swear that he actually convinced Matthew to hang out for the first five laps, because he's just sitting fifth place, anywhere from fifth place to 10th place for like the first four or five laps of that race. And then, like, they just, you know, took the governor off of the bike. Like, they gave him a new bike that didn't have like the you know, the junior gears on it, and it was like the sixth lap, and he just like went poof, gone, you know. And it was nothing for him. It was no effort. It wasn't anything. It was just all of a sudden, you know. I think it was
it was playing to the house, right?
Yeah, it was like Tony. Yeah, it was just his hometown, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, there he is, and then he just sort of cruised on to the win. So we need we need Wout. We need some other stars. We need Pidcock, maybe, you know, who's like another guy. I don't know if we call him a cyclocross guy, but another guy who's tearing it up on the road right now. What is he? Is he winning the Giro, U23 Giro?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is. Talk about crossover.
That's
can't
a really, that's
Pidcock.
A really good point, Bill, on the, on Pidcock. Like, he might be the next one, right? Because look at what he's doing at Worlds.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, he doesn't come out of that system. He doesn't need out of the Dutch or Belgian system. He doesn't need to show the respect. He just goes in there and is like, I can hang with these guys. And he goes out and does it. You know, like that Hoegerheide race, he was doing it and then he just blew up, but which is fine. You know, same with Joris Nieuwhuis was up there as well. It's like the non-Dutch, non-Belgians. That's what we need. You know, that's why going back to Stibar, that's why it was so fun to have him there, because here was a guy from sort of the outside of what we saw as the heartland of cyclocross, and he was better than Sven. You know, anytime they got together, it was like that was the guy that Sven was scared of, and a lot of those world championships he couldn't hang with him, and then Stibar would beat him. So that's kind of what we need. We need these guys to come in here and rival Vanderpool. And I understand it. You know, I understand little guy likes watching him and the majesty of seeing him out there putting on a clinic, but it's like, yeah, you know, let's get some racing.
Yeah. It's kind of like watching F1 when Hamilton is off the front by 10 seconds and then all the racing is in second to fifth car. Yeah. So
speaking of cross and the season, do you guys think this 2020 COVID road season, how is that going to impact the cross season? Are people going to come in like raring to go strong? Are they going to be tired?
Do you think this is an opportunity? Because I was actually looking at this today and we've only lost... Well, I mean, from last year, I think we're doing the same. There are still 11 World Cups on the schedule for this year, from November until January. And you have the road season that's been so, you know, forced into this late summer, early fall. Do we get like what we've seen in the U.S. for years, where your Cat 2 roadie stud in your hometown says, cyclocross, and they're already flying from the end of the road season in August, jump into cyclocross and are just like unstoppable. I mean, this is the year for all those world tour guys, if they're not racing, to like jump into cyclocross and just crush. I think we could just have
to do this? Logan Owen?
Who was it that I was looking at? Oh, yeah. I was doing a lot of research for this show. Logan Owen. Here's a quick Logan Owen fact, because I had as part of this, and we're going to have to come back to this, in America and who's still racing here, Keegan Swenson, as my all-around best American cyclist right now, beat Logan Owen as a junior.
Yeah, I'm curious on, you know, bringing up the Logan Owen. I did mean that because, like, you know, if you have these guys that have the pedigree, can they just then, how hard is the transition to these guys? Or does it need to be someone even higher up in the scale?
Who do we see? Like, so the Izagirre brothers raced cross a few years ago in Spain. And broke his arm on a bridge. But, like, that would be that was kind of a crazy thing to see. Like, who else could we see coming in? Okay, so Wout's on the team bus. He's talking to Sepp about cross. Maybe Sepp gets in. Dumoulin. Hey, what do you think about that? It's a time trial for an hour.
Yeah.
Caleb Ewan. Throw him out there.
Okay.
He could handle his bike.
That would be awesome.
Zigzagging through there. Be amazing.
Just start them in the back row.
Want to know another one of my little factoids when I was going through Rabobank guys.
Yeah,
one of our favorite people and friends of the shows was taking a win for America. Another Rabobank guy who raced some cyclocross, Levi Leipheimer. Ugh. Of his four races that I think he raced, at least two of them, if not more. The guy who won the race and beat Levi was Tobin.
Nice. So Levi had a more successful cross career than Lance Armstrong.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Lance, just that one Cross Vegas.
And how did you guys feel about that when you guys were out there at Cross Vegas watching Cross Vegas? Were you just embarrassed at that moment? Like, oh, this is just ruining the future of this sport, having this guy just think he can come in. And wasn't he illegally doing that race too? Because he hadn't reported for UCI USADA testing. Cause remember he had the window of testing to get back in.
I don't know, but here's the thing about if we want to go back to that Cross Vegas race with Lance, and this was the great thing about Cross Vegas is him being in it. It didn't stick out because he wasn't even close to like the only oddball out there. Florian Vogel was racing this. He came in. What did he come in? He was eighth place that year. You know, you got a. Oh, here's another one. There you go. You know, you were talking about Sepp and being beat by Matt Shriver. Shriver also beat Lance in that race. It was just like everybody who's anybody is out there racing this race. So it really, you know, you never know who's going to jump into it. And it's always kind of fun just to see who was showing up. And
yeah,
and he wasn't even a factor. I mean, Lance was 22nd in that race.
Yeah, imagine that.
You know who won it?
Mario Cipollini.
Mario Cipollini did not win. Any guesses, Zach, Michael?
I already looked. I'm looking at the results right now.
Yeah.
It's Tree Farm.
Tree Farm. Taking the win.
Nice.
Over Timmy.
I wish his Twitter account was alive during winning that race, or if you could like do like a time jump back to see like what Tree Farm would be saying about beating Lance.
Adam Craig third, Jonathan Page fourth, Thomas Frischknecht was fifth.
Where was Kubush?
Kubush
was sixth.
Yeah. Sauser seventh, Vogel eighth. All the mountain bikers were hanging out together. Jeremy Powers ninth. Yeah.
Who do you think was in 16th place, Tim?
Oh yeah.
No. Jonathan Page.
The dangler, Jamie Driscoll.
Oh, Driscoll, yeah. You already mentioned Page. All right, sorry.
Professional, I believe, skateboarder Ali Goulet coming in last. All right, Tim. So I know that along with you've been putting on in some great miles down there in Florida, I think of the slow ride crew, you put the other two to shame by far.
Yes.
with the rides that you're getting
in. Super, super hot. It is miserable riding outside.
Yeah. And to combat that, you actually built your own little trainer setup with a TV and everything in your backyard. And I think you got like the kiddie pool next to it so you can sort of, you know, refresh after rides and all that good kind of stuff.
I have six fans on me.
Six fans. Now, when you go out for a ride, I know you got your sweet titanium bike, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And you got like the cargo bike when you're just sort of tooling around and doing errands, and mountain bike, you got the track bike, you got all these different kind of bikes. When you have this sweet setup in your back, shouldn't you have a bike that's just dedicated to that discipline, to the indoor riding, that's made for it?
Oh, absolutely. Because it is a major pain in the ass picking a bike that I want to put on the trainer, lug it around, and it looks like crap out there, and you just can't keep it out there.
That's where Watt Bike comes in, and the new Watt Bike Atom, which has just been released in the U.S. for the first time, and it's a smart bike. It's capable of connecting to all of the major apps. I know that you guys have talked about this on the slow ride, that it's sort of this double-edged sword. It is Zwift certified, so you know that all of the watts that you are putting into it are going to be accurate and correct. So when you're doing your training, you know exactly what's going into it and exactly what you're getting out of it. Of course, with all the cheaters on Zwift, you may be at a disadvantage, but that's okay. Yeah. Because with your Watt bike, you know that you have that higher ground.
Yes, and there's two things that stick out to me on the Watt bike just looking at it by going to the wattbike.com/US site. What's important to me, one, the bike looks amazing. It you know, it should be like a red dot. They're probably selling this thing inside MoMA. It just looks good. It will fit into either your penthouse suite overlooking Central Park, or it can fit in my backyard looking good and resplendent next to the kiddie pool. And it actually adds major resale value to the house there. I might include it if I'm going to ever sell this house on Zillow. The Watt bike looks good. Here's the second thing, is that it is legit in the fact that this whole thing was designed around the British cycling Olympic team and the track sprinters that needed something that could physically withstand the watts that they were putting down. That's why it's called the Watt bike. It is quite simple. This is the whole setup. This is what led to Great Britain winning all of those medals in the 2012 Olympics, the home Olympics there in London. I think they cleaned up like 30 of the 31 medals or something like that. So yeah, the Watt bike is the real deal. It's legit and it hooks up to Zwift. So it's the best of all worlds and it feels like you're riding outside.
Yeah, I think the British cycling is a great point for a couple things. One, you know, they always talk about marginal gains. Well, this is kind of where it starts. You have something like this right away, it's going to be better than what you're getting with your bike into a smart trainer. Because as you said, it's already there. It's all set up. You don't have to worry about putting a bike in there. And then it's something that, you know, as cyclists come in all different sizes and all different strengths, and Sir Chris Hoy was able to get on this thing and not tear it to shreds. And if you've ever seen him, you know that that's a feat. So if a guy like that can train on this and be successful, then I think it's going to be great for you as well. And as Tim mentioned, what we want you to do is go to wattbike.com/US. That's wattbike.com/US. The link will also be in the show notes, and go check out the Watt bike. So, okay, Tim, I wanted before we let you go, and it's a little out of order, but I did want to get back to Florida Cross just real quickly, because one thing I got to give a shout out to CrossCopter coming out of the FLCX scene, you know, sort of the early drone footage, which is pretty sweet. So here's what I wanted to like sort of do my penance for, like, years later. When I was starting getting into covering cross and looking at all the different scenes, so we're talking about, like, you know, early 2000s, and I saw what was going on in Florida, and being the coastal elite that I am, but trying to be less of, I would look at the Florida cyclocross. It was flat and sandy in a lot of places, which is fine, but there was one thing that I kept coming back to and would give them more shit about, and in retrospect I just wanted to apologize for. But here's what happened. There was one race that had a course that was nice and wide, which we love. It was taped super wide. They actually had tape, unlike some of the other Florida FLCX races who just had like those little like contractor flags. Yeah.
Utility flags. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So we had stakes, we had tape, but the tape, and it was super wide, you know, like at least you could run six wide if you wanted down there. And they put their planks like on that section, and they put the planks like in the middle of the track with like 8 feet on either side until the tape. And then they had like video of it, and everybody was like queuing up to go over the planks, because that's what you do in cyclocross. And I was just like, ride around the damn things. Why is nobody riding around them? And it was just like lemurs. They were just like all just like one after the other over the planks. And people got...
Who did that? Was that Zach McDonald?
Oh, yeah. He did it at Louisville years ago and had to do it twice. But he sort of squeezed by. And then they actually changed the rule. And the rule now is what the intent of the race organizer is. But... And I kept calling them. People were like, oh, you know, stop being an asshole. That's just, you know, they know they have to go over the thing. But I'm like, but no, they didn't. There was an A, B, and a C line, and everybody just took the B.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things here that, you know, I don't know where the, feel free to cut all this, but I do like having this conversation of Florida Cyclocross and what we were able to bring to it. And I know Michael is in the same boat, being in New Orleans and kind of these smaller underserved populations of cyclocross as we're growing the sport. One is you're in an eternal battle with road season truly taking place in early season. So you, yes. you have, you're never going to get the riders to come out in November, December, because that is when the good bike riding is, right? So you, like, road season shuts down here in Florida every year. It shut down in June, and then it would start back up in September, October for the state championships. So you were always up against, you know, great year-round riding that no one would ever want to do cross. So we tried to make it as entertaining and as exciting as possible. Lots of parties that I feel like CrossCopter did a good job of going. We took a old playbook out of the old Little Guy Racing team with the race I put on Swamp Cross, where we did the Southeast Single Speed Championship, because we just, you know, the old messenger style was you would just call the race the world championship, and then eventually everyone would come because they would just assume that it was the championship. So we would have riders come in, like Robert Marion was like taking, you know, living out of his van, and he's like, oh, I'm going to go to the single speed championships in Gainesville, Florida. At the same time, we had Ryan Woodall, who became our figurehead because we lost Stephen Hyde, because when Stephen Hyde got identified out of Pensacola and was living his punk rock lifestyle across the country, Ryan Woodall has always been true. He was an elite level mountain biker that then went to Austin, Texas, and besides worrying about if the trees were going to get rotted out and hugged away, he was focused on winning the Masters National Championships over Adam St. Germain. And he had to do it from a fifth row start, because USA Cycling, defended to the nth degree by the coastal elite, including the likes of Colin Reuter and Bill Shiken on Twitter, that Ryan Woodall did not deserve a front row startup because of how the USA Cycling rankings worked, and these rankings that were based on field quality. And that was always the problem here in Florida, is that there's hardly any transition. So Woodall would have to go chase points to maybe get a third or fourth row start up in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, and it's inherently unfair. And I feel that has actually hurt Florida cyclocross at a level, thanks to USA Cycling beyond. And this is what, one of my beefs have always been with that setup, because while you have the coastal true hotbeds, they deserve it, sure, it doesn't do anything to recognize the true heroes of cyclocross that are coming up, like the Stephen Hydes. He had to move across the country, but the talent was still there, and it was in Pensacola, Florida. So what can we do as a country to further recognize the true talents in cyclocross without forcing them to travel insane amount of miles for such little payout?
Yeah, no, I think that's that is a valid point, and I always loved all of the pressure that you put on Woodall as well.
You loved it too, I'm sure.
To have to defend the honor of Florida's cyclocross against any snowbird that came down there vacationing, and they were like, oh, there's a cross race, I'm going to jump in this cross race. Because I know we had some Mid-Atlantic guys who were pretty fast here and went down there, and then I know you were like in his ears, like, all right, these are the guys you got to beat, because we can't let them come into our dojo and take these wins. And from what I understand, he held his own against some pretty damn fast riders.
It is small fish, big pond, or big fish, small pond is how it would go. But I think that the point is always the same. What can we do as, to grow the sport of cycling and cyclocross? And, you know, you got to carry the momentum when it's there. And at times USA Cycling, put up some barriers, but folks down here have continued the spread of it. And what I'm seeing coming out of Pensacola, where Michael has gone up to race, I think that the impact of having a national champion that's come out of there has also been super positive in growing the scene. So, it's exciting to see. Georgia's always had a fairly strong scene, and I hope it only continues with more and more credit being put on cyclocross for the success of Wout Van Aert and Matthew Vanderpoel.
Michael, have you ever been to Sluggo's?
Yes, I actually went. I raced Pensacola stage race a few times, and I went to Sluggo's because of the Slow Ride podcast, and they were closed.
Perfect. I would expect nothing else from that whole confluence of events.
Sluggo's is out of business.
It was like a podcast pilgrimage, and I was so happy to be like part of something cool. I heard it had a punk rock vibe. I was cool with that. Yeah, and it was closed, and I was very upset.
It was we did a really good job here in Florida of just being a real Twitter mob of constantly hitting up Steven Hyde about like what his favorite meal was at Sluggo's. I remember when, you know, anybody that was a Florida cyclocross racer was doing like the cross race and it was being live streamed on usacycling.com or whatever. We would just be blowing up the chat on the YouTube. Just like, oh, Florida's in the house. And people are like, this is why we hate the state of Florida. We know we're just doing what we could. So,
awesome. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us. It's it is always fun to talk to you.
Thank you. And I want to say, you know, I appreciate the apology and the your coastal elitism has, you know, I feel we've turned the corner now, Bill, in our friendship. But in all seriousness, I absolutely love your pod. I love what you guys are doing here on the Media Pit and all of the other things that are coming on the network. But in particular, your leadership in cyclocross coverage here in the U.S. Is needed because it is such a void when we look at the mainstream cycling media and what it lacks. And you're able to bring a good perspective and really tell the stories.
Thank you, Tim. And we'll see the rest of you on the next one. 198.
Hey, Wide Angle Podium friends. Join me, longtime cyclocross writer Molly Herford.
And me, endurance coach Peter Glassford, on the Consummate Athlete podcast.
You'll learn about how the pros like Katarina Nash, Ellen Noble, and Magalie Rochette train.
And hear the best advice from experts in exercise science, nutrition, and sports psych to crush your racing goals.
We discuss topics like how to run for cyclocross training.
If strength training will improve your cycling.
How NASCAR can teach you how to corner smoother.
And how to fuel for a long day at the races.
Come hang out and learn how to live a happy, adventurous life.
Subscribe to the Consummate Athlete podcast and visit us online at consummateathlete.com.
Ba 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 ba. Nibali, Betiol, Baroccoli, DeLuca.